Remaker's Mark, Episode 16, The Sting. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Remaker's Mark. Today, on Episode 16, we'll be discussing the caper classic, The Sting. With me, as always, are my friends Andy, the big Alabama Wicks, who's in from New Orleans. Andy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, how are you?
What the hell?
That was awesome.
Wow. Big Alabama.
I'm doing great. Thanks. I appreciate your asking. Jeremy Suitcase Nilsson, how are you doing tonight?
Everything's Jake, Kyle. Thanks for asking.
Everything's Jake. I like to hear that. Horseface Lee Hickory Stick, how are you tonight?
I'm just fabulous. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Mark Limehouse Chappie Josting, how are things in your world today?
Great. Thank you.
Good, good. Happy to hear it. And I'm Kyle Crying Delzy Delahunt. I'm not sad. I just cry a lot. I just got feelings. What can you say?
It's a condition.
And it's a condition. Exactly. And we're happy to be coming to you tonight to discuss the movie The Sting. But before we do so, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics Events for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. Upcoming events include Buzzwords, about birds and contemporary art spaces, on Friday, January 3rd at the Astor Cafe. And on Friday, January 17th, the Grow Out Blowout, a benefit concert for the Beard Race at the Triple Rock Social Club. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com.
All right. Thanks much again to Modern Antics. Now, moving on to The Sting. Andy, will you give us a brief summary of the movie and then let us know what brief history we all have with this film?
Happy to. The Sting is a 1973 American caper film set in 1936, involving a complicated plot by two professional conmen, or grifters, to swindle a mob boss. The film was directed by George Roy Hill, who had directed stars Paul Newman and Robert Redford in the Western classic Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Created by screenwriter David S. Ward, the story was inspired by real-life cons perpetrated by brothers Fred and Charlie Gondorf. It was hugely successful, being nominated for 10 Oscars and winning 7, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Original Screenplay. This is a movie, for me personally, I feel like I've seen it a few times, but I think when I was watching it, I realized that if I had seen it in its entirety, it was a long, long time ago, and I feel what I was probably more accurately for me was seeing it in bits and chunks and pieces. I was telling Jared just today that a lot of the individual scenes felt familiar to me, like I'd seen them before, but the plot of the movie seemed new. So that made me think, like, if I had seen this movie in its entirety, I didn't pay very good attention. Which shouldn't surprise most people. Who knows?
That's a good way to put it. I think I am very much in the same boat. I remember seeing it with my family, but I don't remember when. So it was sometime in childhood, I guess. Not too terribly young, but not teenage years. So I don't know. We'll say 11. Call it a nice round, lovely number. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I've seen it all the way through since then, up until recently. So, but I do remember scenes very vividly. And then, like, it's as they were happening, I went, "Oh yeah, right."
I had a lot of those moments too, a lot of reincarnated moments. Like, oh, I saw this in a previous life. So, and then the piano music, the music of Scott Joplin, features very prominently throughout this movie. And that brought me back to my piano playing days in elementary school when I think I had Scott Joplin Ragtime Level 1 that haunted my dreams.
Nice. Yeah, that was a nice little throwback there for sure.
I can still play The Entertainer.
Yeah.
I can play about half of it.
Half of it?
Sorry, I went Swedish there for a second. A little Swedish stroke. I'm okay.
Happens to the best of us. All right, thanks. Now, in part one, as usual, we talk about recasting the movie. So how we would recast major and minor characters alike. In this movie, we have 3 major characters and 4 minor characters to recast. First of which is Doyle Lonigan. Mark, tell us about Doyle Lonigan.
Certainly. Originally played by Robert Shaw, Doyle Lonigan, make sure you get that right, it's Doyle Lonigan, is a crime boss, and if there are bad things happening in Chicago, there's a good chance that he's behind it. Lonigan gets on Johnny Hooker's bad side by way of murdering Hooker's partner, but will not be easily marked, given his habit of making people dead.
You see that fellow in the red sweater over there? His name's Danny McCoy. Works a few of the protection rackets for Canaro when he's waiting for something better to happen. Danny and I have known each other since we were six. Take a good look at that fist, Floyd. Because if he ever finds out I can be beat by one lousy grifter, I'll have to kill him and every other hood who wants to muscle in on my Chicago operation. You follow?
Yes, sir.
Good lad.
I really like Lonigan as a bad guy. Maybe the occupation of crime boss is a little bit vague, but I really get the menacing thing from him. In addition to kind of sophisticated, a combination of which I greatly enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if we're talking about both sophisticated and menacing, well, the natural inheritor of this role should be Gabriel Byrne.
Ooh, I like that. I almost picked him.
Yeah.
I
he's Irish.
Yes. I almost went with him too.
Yep.
You know, Mark, I think this is the first time that you've stuck with the ethnic traits of the original portrayal of the character in your recasting.
Yeah.
You have kind of a habit of going rogue.
Yeah, I'm an ethnic rogue. Level 6.
But I like your pick. I like it very much. I agree. Gabriel Byrne is he's a bad, bad man.
Oh, yeah. And, well, maybe not in real life, but he makes you think so in film.
He's a jerk. I'm kidding. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He killed my uncle. That's not true. But, yeah, I mean, we all know and love Gabriel Byrne. He's everywhere. He's a well, gosh, I mean, he was the devil in End of Days. I mean, he was in Usual Suspects, which we knew, Miller's Crossing. And who could forget the classic Cool World?
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I did.
He was in Cool
Until
World?
Until just now.
Yeah, actually, I did too. So I guess who can remember the classic Cool World?
IMDb
where he
can.
Where he starred opposite an animated Kim Basinger, I think.
Wow. God, that's right. That was a bizarre
and
movie.
And Brad Pitt, wasn't he in that?
But he was not animated.
No, he was a live-action Brad Pitt with a live-action Gabriel Byrne and an animated Kim Basinger.
Best of three. Wow.
You're thinking of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I think.
No.
Very
no.
similar.
That sounds like a terrible movie.
I think you're thinking of Christopher Lloyd, who is very different than Gabriel Byrne in so, so many ways.
He's also menacing.
That's true. Oh, he's got potential for it. What has Gabriel Byrne done of late? What have he done for us lately, Gabriel, is what I'm trying to say.
That's a really good question. I see so many things on his IMDb page that I don't recognize. The last thing that I see that I actually know is Vanity Fair in 2004. But, okay. I mean, he's got like 20 things on his resume after that.
I have not seen the Vikings series that was on this year, but I have heard that it is quite good.
Huh. Oh, excellent. You've heard of it. That's great.
I am aware of it.
Yes. I had no idea that existed.
It did look pretty cool. It looked, I think they were a little gratuitous. I think it was like History Channel trying to be Stars Network.
Okay.
It's, you fake. Can make that, it's totally fake.
The Vikings were never real. Everyone
Lots
knows
of Merkins. What? I saw some episodes of In Treatment, which was decent. It wasn't great, but it was decent. He played a conflicted therapist. Some
heard about that
broadcasting there.
I've heard of the Lincoln Center. Looks like he did something there.
these entries on his resume notwithstanding, I think we can all agree that Gabriel Byrne is an excellent choice and will make me win this one. So speaking of Vikings, Jer, how about you?
Nice. Good segue.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
What? Wow. Was that a Viking horn? Okay. Anyway, I was probably apparently the only one that did not at least consider Gabriel Byrne, largely because I did not think of him. So good job.
Good reason.
But who I did pick is probably not as menacing in the majority of his roles, but has played some menacing characters in the past, and I have thoroughly enjoyed him, and he's also just a very stalwart actor who I think could bring the right sense of poise, and if you wrong him, he will destroy you, type of glint in his eye. And that is Viggo Mortensen.
Nice. I like that pick, too.
Hmm. Yep. Yes. There's some serious menace there, no doubt.
Totally. I would reference probably End of Violence? No.
History of Violence.
History of Violence. I just had it, and then I lost it. Yeah, the History of Violence.
Eastern Promises is probably a good one for this,
too. I have not seen that one, but I've heard good things.
That's another Cronenberg, right? They did like that back-to-back, I think.
Can't say I know.
I think so.
But what I liked...
That's a great picture.
What I liked about Robert Shaw's portrayal of him is that he didn't overact it. He almost underacted it.
Yeah.
which for Robert Shaw is pretty remarkable, but he wasn't all crazy bad guy. He was very much in control, except at the very end when he's being rushed out and then he's, you know, they have my money and that kind of, but,
how's that again?
I have $500,000 down there.
Nice. It's as if I'm listening to the movie.
That was Quint from Jaws, I think.
Weird.
But by and large, it's all just sort of this seething. You have to just believe that he's capable of completely destroying you or hiring a giant football playing thug to do his dirty work for him. But he's not all over the screen. He's not Willem Dafoeing it with chewing on scenery and that sort of thing. He's
wow. It's going to be awkward when the rest of us pick Willem Dafoe.
Well, go right ahead.
Gonna call a quick audible here.
So, Viggo Morgenstern.
Viggo Morgenstern?
Of the Poughkeepsie Morgensteins?
Yes.
Yeah, that's I like how you describe Robert Shaw's performance, and I agree. I decided to go with mine just a little more affected than that, but not too much. But I really appreciate how the original was that way. You know, I really liked his original performance, and part of the reason was that it was pretty laid back. Not laid back. He was fuming all the time, but you just never quite knew when he was going to blow up and how. And I would have liked just a little bit more fume to it. But yeah, I think Viggo could do that totally. I think that's a great pick.
The times when it works are at the beginning when, and we talked about this at an earlier time when his sort of right hand man comes and approaches him to tell him about what happened in Chicago, and he's playing baccarat or whatever it is that he's playing there. And it's just all from the back, and you just kind of see the side of his face as he's essentially just explaining to this guy, have somebody local go and put two caps in their ears or whatever. And like, it's just very casual, very, very muted, but also just very menacing and very, I don't know if evil is the right word, but it gets the point across that this is a bad guy.
Yeah, it's as though he was asked, do you want a turkey sandwich and a ham sandwich? And he says, turkey. Yeah. But in fact, he's ordering the death of someone. So.
I think even if he was ordering a turkey sandwich, he'd still go,
yeah, an evil turkey sandwich with no avocado, because that's what makes a sandwich non-evil.
It's a very charismatic fruit vegetable.
It's true. Fruitstable?
Yes. Kyle, since you're so excited to explain your pick, who did you pick?
Well, yeah. Thank you, Jer. I went with Tim Roth. I think nice. He can do just about anything. He does intense well. He does brooding and fuming well. I think he could be very believable as a mob boss. I think he could be very believable as a killer. And I just think that he is hugely versatile. Could be just about anything, but I think he would really shine in this role. And I think in some of like the Tarantino-ish roles, he was given a chance to like overact to his strengths. But I also think that given the opportunity, he can be very subtle too. And I think that it would kind of be shooting for the Tarantino style overacting, but only in the moments that truly called for it. Like in the moments, and some of this was also just like how movies were shot in the 70s. It was like, you know, when Robert Shaw tackles Robert Redford in the train car, I was like, I could have taken that. That didn't look that painful. And Robert Redford is just like, oh my God, that really hurt, you know? But so some of that is just sort of like how they filmed action, you know, before it became a big deal. But I really think that him exploding could be really explodey, if you will. So yeah, Tim Roth was my pick.
Yeah, he's got some really good intensity.
Yep.
I can definitely see him in this role.
Thanks. All right, Andy, how about you? Who did you pick for Doyle Lonergan?
Liam Neeson.
Excellent.
Two words. That's right.
Liam Neeson's.
Because while Gabriel Byrne is a great actor, he's no big, scary Irishman. Is Liam Neeson Irish? I'm really hoping he is now. I walked up to that cliff without checking to see how far down it was.
Gabriel Byrne actually is a big, scary Irishman.
Well, but that's true. I think Liam Neeson is bigger and scarier.
Bigger, yeah.
Because I've seen Liam Neeson cleave Tim Roth, actually, in Twain with a giant sword, and it scared me.
Was that Rob Roy?
He also punched a wolf in the face.
I mean, come on!
He's got a very specific set of skills that has important.
It's being written into every single one of his roles.
Oh my gosh.
He has to punch a wolf at some point, whether it's somebody named the wolf like Harvey Keitel.
He's also very good at lists. Anyway. So Liam Neeson, wow. I thought would be, he's the guy in that scene where he's ordering the turkey. Well, he's not really ordering the turkey sandwich, but Liam Neeson, all he's got to do is just turn. You see that profile looks like a Greek statue with a broken nose. And you're just like, oh God. And then I could see him like in the poker scene in the train car when Paul Newman's character is just egging him on and calling him everything but the correct name. Like Monument. I could see Liam Neeson pounding his fist on the table so hard to almost knock it over, you know?
Yep.
Like to really make you feel like, oh my God, he is a, not only is he an evil man, but he could snap my neck right now. That yeah. kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see a little bit more evil from him because even though he is, you know, tough and imposing, he's always so good.
Well, yeah. But well, okay. I will point you to Taken because really I think he, while he is maybe doing something for the greater good, he certainly does not, he's not a law abiding citizen.
He's very cold and calculating.
He's very cold blooded and calculating. Exactly. Thank you, Jer.
Fair enough.
So I think that he has demonstrated that he can almost switch off the emotion to be completely focused on the objective. And if that objective is making you dead, then you are dead. But if the objective is also trying not to walk away from a bookie with $500,000 in there while being dragged away, that he would put up a heck of a fight. I don't know why I said that.
You have your reasons.
I was trying to summarize and it didn't really work. And
spoiler, I guess.
Hey, if people haven't seen this by now.
Yeah.
It's not even in the second
one. It's in the Library of Congress. Come on. Yeah.
Came out 40 years ago.
As are all of our tweets.
That's true.
Lee, help us out.
Well, I wanted someone to, who has that great, quality that Robert Shaw brought to the role of being very cool and calculating. You know, he doesn't really lose his temper that often. And there's a reason why he's gotten to the level that he's gotten to because he's smart. I mean, he knows how to do this. So I also went with Liam Neeson.
Nice.
For nice. all the reasons already mentioned, but I would like to add, Batman Returns.
Ooh.
His role in
begins.
That. Begins. Yeah, sorry. Batman sorry. Begins.
Begins, returns, comes, goes, big deal.
It's one of the
strikes like that one.
He was very convincing as Danny DeVito as the Penguin.
Yes.
And also as Christopher Walken as that guy.
He's very much a chameleon.
Batman Begins, one of the many Batman movies that have come out. But yeah, he plays a great bad guy in that. So
Kaiser Sose, yep, right?
Yes. Exactly. Ra's al Ghul.
I'm so confused.
Just keep going, Jared. It's okay.
I like Lee's pick well. Better than Andy's.
What?
Mine is the Batman, Liam Neeson, and his is the Taken, Liam Neeson.
Mine's the
and
Rob Roy. Is the, Rob frickin' Roy.
Everybody's is the wolf-punching Liam Neeson.
We can all agree to that. I think so.
Yep.
All right. So in the Royal of Doyle Lonergan, originally played Royal by Robert Shaw. What?
You said the Royal of Doyle.
Did I? No, that's just my natural Irish accent.
You did say that. All
right. Let's try this again. All right. In the role of Doyle Lonergan, originally played by Robert Shaw, Mark went with Gabriel Byrne, Jer went with Viggo Mortensen, I went with Tim Roth, and Andy and Lee both went with Liam Neeson. Now moving on to the role of Henry Gondorf. Andy, tell us about Henry Gondorf.
Henry Gondorf has a reputation of running the big con, but when Johnny Hooker seeks him out to help him avenge Luther's death, he finds a passed-out drunk who runs a merry-go-round at a house of ill repute. Or is that just all part of the con? Gondorf is the patient yin to Hooker's impatient yang, the Yoda to this young Skywalker. I had a few actors in mind for this role when I was casting it, and then I saw a preview for an upcoming movie that cemented my pick for this one. I chose Matthew McConaughey.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you. And the preview that I saw specifically was for the Dallas Buyers Club. If anyone has seen this preview, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
I thought McConaughey, well, first of all, so the character of Henry Gondorf to me has to be very calm, very debonair, very handsome,
a lot of this kind of wink and a nod and a you know sly gaze, a lady killer a little bit. And I think Matthew McConaughey fits a lot of that. I think initial impressions of him are a little bit of the Southern kind of good old boy charmer, which he definitely is. He doesn't hide his love of, I think Texas is where he's from, but he has some amazing acting chops. And I think, again, if you get a chance, go look at the preview for Dallas Buyers Club and you'll see what I'm talking about. And I think he's getting to an age now where he could play the character of Gandorf pretty well. You may have to put a little bit of gray in his hair. Maybe not really. Maybe who knows? Maybe he's Steve Martin. We just don't know it. But I think, especially compared to the person that I picked for Johnny Hooker, I think it would be a good pick for Gandorf. So Matthew McConaughey was my choice. Kyle, who you got?
Wow, don't rush out, man. I was about to compliment your pick.
I was about to
go
not
ahead.
Compliment.
Go ahead, Kyle. You can go. Jeremy, you can mute.
Muting. Excellent. I just find it kind of hilarious and yet sort of beautiful in the way that Matthew McConaughey has sort of blossomed as a legitimate actor. He had his legitimacy in roles in which he was, you know, perfect for, that being a toned, bronzed, very charming Southern person for the first however many years of his career.
He had his peak in Sahara, let's be honest.
Yes, also, yes.
Or absolutely. In Dazed and Confused.
Yes.
Yep. But now, like with Mud and Wolf of Wall Street, the Scorsese movie that's coming out, and the Dallas Buyers Club. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. You know, he's just like, he's a legitimate choice for like challenging roles and interesting roles. And I think there's still commonalities to some of those. I don't know what the hell he's doing in the Wolf of Wall Street trailer, like his voice and like the mannerisms that he has. It's so strange that I just want to know what in the world is going on with his character. But, you know, he's getting picked by the Scorseses of the world and the, you know, small directors that need a powerful performance. And he's delivering in a big, big way. And I think that's pretty darn impressive given where he kind of has been for his career and rightfully mocked for it. You know, he was typecast for so long that he didn't have anything else. And now he's really showing that he's got a lot more. So that speaks to me as being a good evidence of this being a good choice for that.
We've talked before about the scenes that we pick as the seminal representations of each character. Like we've talked about this in the Breakfast Club movie and things like that. For this one, I think of three scenes. I think of the one where Johnny Hooker first meets Gandorf and he's passed out drunk and has to like dump him in the shower and dump cold water on him. That's scene number one. Scene number two is the poker scene in the train car. Scene number three is, oh my God, I just lost it. So there's two scenes that I think of for, what? Oh, it was the final, the final scene of the bookie where they actually pulled the big con. And there's just a couple looks that Newman kind of throws over his shoulder and kind of gives us a little half smile. And I was thinking of McConaughey in all of those scenes. And I thought, wow, he'd be really good in all of those. I think he could just, you know, almost kind of inhabit the spirit of Paul Newman in some of those and really make it work. So
agree.
Thank you.
Nice. Now, Jared, do you have legitimate umbrage or were you just being?
No, I did.
go for it.
But, well, and it's a small thing, but my only issue with a McConaughey pick is it's, I don't feel like I've seen him be the sophisticated playboy that, I mean, he's always sort of the shirtless, rock hard abs sort of playboy that, you know, gets what he wants on his charm through that way, but he isn't the wearing a tuxedo, running an underground race, whatever those things are called.
Bookie. Right. Didn't we decide that was the name of the joint? Bookie.
I thought the bookie was the guy.
It's both.
Okay.
It's like Kleenex that way.
Ooh. So that would be my only issue with McConaughey is that I would have a hard time seeing him dressed up in a suit, putting on those airs and maintaining that same sort of wink and sly little, I know more than you. I'm the smartest guy in the room.
I think it's a different wink and sly. I think the wink and sly would come off as like, oh, come on, y'all, like that, as opposed to, I think I agree with the sophistication. I think that would translate differently. I would have a hard time seeing McConaughey being the person who orders the Johnny Hooker character around. I would have a harder time with that. And some of that is just, and you addressed it, Andy, in terms of like aging him a little bit physically, but I would just have a little bit hard time with that, believing that presence of kind of ordering someone around and in that sophisticated way. But I'm wondering if just with a slight reformation of the character, it could work equally well just with a different type of suaveness. You know, I think it doesn't have to be sophistication. It can be something that's a little bit different.
And I see this movie, we'll talk about this later, but I think this movie and the Ocean's 11 franchise, both the original and the remake, are very closely related. And I think the Gondorf character and the Danny Ocean characters are very closely related. And if you think of kind of the leadership's ability that both characters have in terms of like assembling their crew and ordering people around, it's a very kind of casual, they don't have to work very hard at that leadership ability. People just kind of naturally look up to them. And I think that McConaughey could do that. I don't feel like he has to be bossing people around. I think he looks, I mean, I would disagree personally. I think you put that guy in a tux and, I mean, come on, he's incredibly handsome. I think he cuts a very dashing figure without having to try very hard. And I think it's a big part of this character is that he makes it look very easy. You know, he makes it look very natural. Like, sure, he's been playing these card games and these cons all his life. So.
Well, and with that character, people follow him and they buy into what he's planning and scheming because they, number one, trust him. And number two, he just has that charisma that people want to follow him. And it's not like he has to order people around. They naturally just go with what he's planning because they know it's going to work and they believe in him for, you know, whatever reason. He's done it in the past or, you know, he's just has that great natural leader vibe. And Paul Newman just embodied that so well. Yeah. McConaughey, and maybe it's me only watching things like Sahara where he's a charismatic leader, but he also is sort of a dopey charismatic leader.
I think of Contact as a reference point.
That's a great
almost
reference.
Like he brought weight to that role that balanced out some of that sort of aw shucks mannerism.
That's what it is. It's his southern drawl. It makes him feel dopier.
And I think we'd have to temper that. But to quote Mark Josting from a previous episode, he is an actor, and I think we could ask him to do that. I would also use the Lincoln Lawyer as another reference for a little
That's
more
a good one. Yeah.
Seriousness for this role too. Okay. I talked a lot of this one, so I will stop. Kyle.
Boy, I shouldn't have said anything. I should have moved on. Jeez. That'll learn me. All right. So I went a bit of a different direction with this. So in the original, Paul Newman and Robert Redford were, I think in actual age were about 12 years apart. And I would have liked to have seen that be a little bit more obvious so that it's a little bit more of a mentor role. I think you can still have friendship in that, and I like the relationship that they built in the original. I just wanted it to be just a little bit different seeming in age. And they did a good job of making him seem a little bit younger and Newman seem a little bit older, but I wanted to space that out even more, but not in a way, and choosing an actor that I think still could be both mentor and friend to the Johnny Hooker character. And so I went with Kevin Spacey. You know, I think that one,
almost
he can do just
went
about
with him.
Anything.
Almost went with him.
But I can just see him holding a room, you know, I mean, like in the scenes at the bookie where he is just running the show, I can see him doing that perfectly. But I can also see him being that kind of, you know, again, aw shucks character in that poker game where he keeps using the wrong names and he's offending everybody. And, you know, so I can see him doing all of those things equally well. And I think he's, you know, the House of Cards has shown that he is doing as good a job in acting as he has ever, really. I mean, I think, you know, the role that he plays in House of Cards is not necessarily a parallel here, but in terms of all the different types of emotions that he has to run in that show and all the different types of performances that he has to give as a character, even. I mean, the role in House of Cards is a politician, and politicians are some of the best actors that there are out there, which is sad, but that's a whole nother episode. But, you know, I just, he can do really anything when he has an end goal, and he will do anything that he needs to take to get there. And I think this movie is all about that.
I like that pick.
Thank you.
I think that, and this is a very superficial thing to say, but I want someone handsomer for this role. Not to say that Kevin Spacey is an ugly man, because he's not. But Paul Newman sets a very high bar.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, I feel like that's a very important part of the character. I don't know if it should be or if it's just my own interpretation of it. So that's my very superficial umbrage.
It's a fair umbrage. I'll give you that.
Apart from that, I think he'd knock it out of the park.
I completely disagree, but I can see how you think that, but you're wrong. All right. Moving on to Mark. Mark, who did you pick for Gondorf? Sorry.
Well, the Wizard. I picked a venerable actor named Ian McClellan.
Mmm, bold. Oh,
I'm sorry.
What is he?
Magneto. I'm gonna help out Andy with this whole handsome thing.
Ooh.
And I'm going to choose Idris Elba.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think
I was waiting for a follow up to the inhale.
That's all I got.
Anyway, I think his resume is really diverse. He's put in so many different types of performances that I think he can do the acting within the acting really, really well. I mean, if you look at like his character from The Office, Charles Minor, to the captain that he plays in Prometheus, to the Thor movies, and he's
Pacific Rim.
Yeah. I mean, he's really put everything into all these very, very diverse roles, and I've been very impressed with him. I think he can do the sort of everything that we already discussed with the Gandalf character. I think he's really up to it.
Yeah. I think so when we did our intros this time, a big part of the sting is about nicknames and all of kind of the fun, silly, goofy gangster nicknames. I think henceforth Idris Elba would be known as Idris Canceling the Apocalypse Elba. I don't know how he could be anything other than that after that line. I mean, that was just so epic. As far as a pick, I like it. My only concern is that if we set it in that original era, I think being a black man would be very interesting. That would be a really different play on that. It would bring up a whole new set of conflicts or sets of conflicts. I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think it's very different than the original role. So I think he would do really, really well in it. I think we just have to rethink the movie in a big way. And again, I'm not against that. I just think that that's a very different presentation and a different plot kind of all around. So yeah, that would just be a challenge. I think.
I totally agree. And I was definitely thinking of modern remake when I picked him.
Gotcha.
It feels like it would become a Baz Luhrmann reinterpretation of this movie.
Ooh, cool. I would watch that.
I'm not to say, not to say that's a bad thing. I'm saying it's what popped into my head.
I would cast that movie.
Yeah.
The only issue I would have with him is that I don't see that sly wink to the camera.
Paul Newman, I would agree with that.
It makes so effortless.
I'm seeing it in the Prometheus character, but maybe you guys are, I don't know, blind to the talent.
I would use the scene where Charlize Theron basically proves that she's not a robot to him, where she basically says, "All right, my room, 10 minutes." And he's like, you know, I think he actually makes that noise. It's kind of that like, well, all right, here we go. Yep.
Okay. Well, Lee, let's hear from you.
Thanks. I thought of this character. This is the one I had the hardest time casting, but I think I wanted someone who could have a very fatherly presence, and yet during those moments when he has to pretend to be extremely mean, he can totally get there. So I went with Bryan Cranston.
I
would have to. I guess just tag Breaking Bad for the spectrum of what he would have to play for this role. So I just think that he's extremely versatile. He can be very funny. He can be very intense and evil at times even. But I think he's perfect for this one.
Yeah, I had a hard time casting almost this whole movie, but especially Gondorf and Hooker. Those are just amazingly hard to pick. And so much of it was just trying to capture the charisma and suaveness, suavacity, suaverino of Paul Newman and Robert Redford. I mean, just like how do you recreate that without, you know, we're going to talk about this in the second half, but just like basically making Ocean's 11, you know, like Clooney and pitting it. Yeah. And there's nothing against that. You know, if that's your choice, that's fine. But that's kind of like, I think, the modern equivalent of that. And I think none of us wanted to do exactly that. So with that challenge, where do we go with that? And I can't see Cranston doing quite that suaveness, but I think he could do everything else in a way that overcomes that.
Absolutely. I think that suaveness, I think, is specific to Paul Newman, and it's just what he brought to the character. I don't think it's necessarily what the character needs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I thought that Bryan Cranston would bring everything that is absolutely necessary for the character.
That's a good way to put it, kind of breaking it down to its most basic essential elements.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yep. So, Jer, what do you got?
Those are all great picks that tie for second. But I chose dashing leading man Josh Brolin as our Gondorf.
Okay.
A Goonie. Interesting.
Yes. I believe our first Goonie.
Oh, wow.
Did we have a Sean Astin in there at some point?
I don't think we did.
I don't think
we'll have to check with the judges.
There's probably been a Corey Feldman, though.
No. Why would we do that?
This many episodes in our first Goonie.
Why wouldn't we do that?
Wow.
But I think Josh Brolin, to me, I think, especially if you look at his kind of goofy role in the Men in Black 3, where he plays young Agent K and kind of does it with the Tommy Lee Jones straight-laced, but also with that just sort of tongue-in-cheek wink to the camera. But then he can also play some very serious roles as well, and he just has that great leading man jawline, and I could see him in a tuxedo running a bookie and just planning this great caper with all of these people that falling in line and doing their parts to make it all happen and running the whole thing, but then at the same time having fun with the whole thing, because I think that really is what separates The Sting from a lot of other sort of heist movies, is that you can just tell that Robert Redford and all of a sudden I just went Jackie Gleason, but that's Sting too. That's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Paul Newman.
Don't go there. Let's avoid that.
Paul Newman and Robert Redford as actors are just having fun. And that really comes out in the movie itself. And I think as serious as it can get at times with, you know, people do get shot, people do die, but ultimately this is a very fun movie. And I think that Josh Brolin could bring a lot of that into it while not making it goofy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he has a certain presence to him, that's for sure.
I have umbrage.
Mm. Andy, tell us about your umbrage.
You always do.
Actually, I haven't had umbrage in a long time. Feels kind of good to have it again.
It's the fiber you're eating.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It really has helped.
You're back in the game, Andy.
Hey! No, and it's not simply retaliatory umbrage. Although I'm not going to lie, there is a little hint of that. He seems a little too mean to me for this particular role. And it could be part, I'll admit that it's probably only in the things in which I've seen him, but he tends to play a harder edged character. He does that very well, but I think for this role, like I can almost see him, if you gave him an Irish accent, playing Doyle Lonigan more than I could think I could see him as Gondorf.
Interesting. I will reference his character, George W. Bush, from the movie W.
And I'll take that. I'll take that.
Andy, I'm going to ask just for a bit of clarification here, in that we had a very, really jerky Skype interruption there, where what I heard was he's a little bit too for me, and I have no idea what the word in between was. So what did you say?
Did you say young?
Did you say young, soft, hard?
I'm going to let the audience fill in the word.
No, boy.
It's like a Mad Libs. He's a little bit too fart
Purple.
For me.
It's a little bit too adjective.
He's a little too adjective for me. I said he's just a little too for me. No, I did it again.
You're like a TLC song.
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Is that TLC?
Such a great song.
Yeah,
yes. It is. Yep.
I said he was a little too mean. Too mean for this role.
Got it.
And then I went on to say everything else that I said before.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Because I thought you were going to say young. And then when you were talking, I was like, wait a minute. He's not talking about age. I don't know what he said.
Kyle, age ain't nothing but a number.
It's true. I thought I could fill in the gap so I wouldn't have to hear it. But turns out, nope. I think you're right on with that, Andy. I really like the pick, but I do agree that that softness and charisma is very different there. It's kind of like he's got almost that film noir about him, more than a lot of actors
very
have.
Gumshoey.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
He's got a very hard edge about him because the world's beating him down and he's beating it back.
Well put.
I would like to move him to my pick for Doyle Lonigan then. Can I do that?
Nope.
No.
Not even with creative editing?
Nope. Oh. I'm getting lazy in my old editing age. What can I say? All right. So in the role of Henry Gondorf, Andy chose Matthew McConaughey. I chose Kevin Spacey. Mark chose Idris Elba. Lee chose Bryan Cranston. And Jer went with Josh Brolin. And now the last of our major characters, the role of Johnny Hooker. Lee, tell us about Johnny Hooker.
Johnny is a small-time grifter who is somewhat seasoned when it comes to small heists, but has yet to pull off the big con. Seeking revenge for a friend's murder, he joins forces with Gondorf in the most elaborate heist of his career.
Listen, Gondorf, am I going to learn to play the big con or not?
So what's your hurry?
I want to play for Lonergan.
Do you know anything about the guy?
Yeah, he croaked Luther. Anything else I got to know?
All right. He runs a numbers racket on the south side. He owns a packing house, a few banks.
Yeah, and half the politicians in New York and Chicago are fixing this world going to cool him out if he blows on you.
I'll get him anyway.
Why?
Because I don't know enough about killing to kill him.
I really wanted to emphasize the youth of this character. You know, he's not someone who's just started out. He's been doing this probably since he was a little kid, but at the same time, you get the sense that he still has a lot to learn. He can be very reckless at times. So I went with Tom Hiddleston.
Nice pick.
Because he just looks like, he still looks like a pretty young guy. I think he's in his 30s now, but I think he's got that kind of boyish charm to him. And I think he could handle, like, you know, all the physical aspects of this role. In my opinion, probably better than Redford did, but
yeah,
that's just me. I mean, I get him more as a physical actor than I do Robert Redford.
Yeah, I kind of tying back to what I said before, I just think that they didn't do action very well back then. I mean, it's just a very different vibe. It's like the punches, or I mean, the scene that I reference is when the detective slams the Erie Kid's face into the table, and it you might as well have seen Charles Durning like put his hand over his face to protect him before he pretended to, like, it was just obviously, like, you know, it was very protected, and then it was like, blood, you know. Yeah. So it's like, it just a lot of that is just done very differently than now. So I think that I would tie that more to the time than to a particular performance, but I agree with you in the physicality of it.
Yeah, I don't see Robert Redford. I've never seen Robert Redford as an action star, but
I'm going to call umbrage on that little tidbit right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
And I will also, it's a little bit of a slant on that, but the one that just came out for him, All Is Lost, especially as a 78-year-old man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
I haven't either, but it looks pretty cool. So put that in your proverbial pipe and proverbially smoke it.
Yeah,
it's a lot of proverbs up in here.
So. Yeah, okay.
But I love the energy of it. I like the youth of it, Lee. I think that's right on. I really like that, and I can just see him, you know, wearing a nice suit and a giant fat wide tie and owning that in every way of it. Yep.
And then blowing $3,000 on one hand of roulette.
Yep. Yep. Always bet black.
Yep. But Mark, who did you have for Johnny the Hooker?
Well, in choosing hookers, forget that joke. Let me start again.
Rewind.
So I also picked Tom Hiddleston.
Ah,
sweet.
And yeah, it's because we're awesome. That's an excellent pick.
Yes.
And my reasons were actually totally different. Although, yeah, it'd be nice to keep the whole discrepancy in age thing going, but I really think there's a lot of subtlety that's required for the role of Johnny Hooker, and Tom Hiddleston is an absolute scientist about acting. I mean, just look up some of his interviews, and well, he'll talk about preparation quite a bit.
Yeah,
and he's a total nerd about Shakespeare. I mean, yeah, we know him as Loki, but I mean, you can think about the subtlety that he brought to that role too. I knew him first as F. Scott Fitzgerald in the movie Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
And he was just so smooth and so debonair and looked absolutely dashing in the suit.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, I didn't know that about his sort of his academic preparedness or his role preparedness. That's pretty interesting. He just seems like a great guy. I just really enjoy him.
Yeah, totally.
Ladies seem to like him. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's always a good thing. That's to fill Redford's shoes. You really got to...
Yeah. Plus, I think he could. Yeah, totally. I think he could totally carry a movie like this.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely got the chops for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Kyle, why did you also choose Tom Hiddleston?
I chose Tom Hiddleston because he's dreamy. I did not choose Tom Hiddleston. In fact, I chose a totally different non-Hiddlestonian. I went with Christian Bale. So one of the things in that, again, talking about kind of a slightly larger age difference between Gondorf and Hooker, is that so my Kevin Spacey is older than Newman was, and my Christian Bale, I think, is a little bit older than Redford was, but I think he can play young. I think he can play, you know, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm actually picturing him kind of in like his Newsies vibe. God, I can't believe I'm saying this.
You would have to.
But you know what I mean? I mean, he owned that energy and he owned that scene, you know? I mean, he knows that world. Oh my God, Newsies, man. I can't believe I'm doing this.
So we have a Newsie and a Goonie?
Yeah, we have a Newsie and a Goonie. I feel like we're in Trading Cards or something right now. It's like a nerd Pokemon. Wow, that's redundant. Never mind. Anyway, so I think he can be dashing. I think he can be suave, but I think he can also be kind of like a scrapper, if you know what I mean. Like he can see both high and low and vacillate wildly between the two. And I think this character needs to be able to do that. You know, he needs to maintain cool under pressure, but also you can feel that pulling at him and straining him. And I think he could do that really well.
I'm a little bit concerned about him just being, well, all those roles lately being so dark,
very dark,
and you, I think you're right to go back and reference Newsies for this one. Like, you have to go back to the very early parts of his career, and also maybe talk about like the first half of Swing Kids. I think he just needs to bring back lightheartedness for this role.
Yeah,
he needs it for his mental health.
I tag. Yeah, that's true. That's for sure. I would tag or I would refer to American Psycho in that I think he played a light role in an extraordinarily dark movie.
Yes.
You know, the way that he played it was not heavy. You know, I mean, the things that he did were obviously terrible. He's a terrible individual and a terrible human being. But the way that he played it had kind of a suaveness and an energy that was. It was just as though he was doing everyday normal stuff. It's just that the everyday normal stuff that he happened to do involved tarps and chainsaws and chasing around staircases, right? So, I mean, like, he had fun with that role, and it showed. And I think that could translate into this. So it doesn't have to necessarily be dark. It can just be him, you know, living with that energy and sort of putting that energy out there in that different environment. So I hear you in terms of what he's been doing, but I don't think that he has to always do that. I think he can not do that equally well.
Being an actor and all.
Being an actor, exactly.
I think it would be, I don't want to say a challenge because, as we've said, he is an actor. But the role of Hooker to me seems a little more wide-eyed, a little bit naive. I mean, he's a small-time con man, but he doesn't seem like he's been exposed to the world of the big con yet. And I feel like he's already a little bit too jaded to be seeking the tutelage of Gondorf, Gandalf. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that. I also think that he could play cocky in a way that Redford did not necessarily do. You know, like he thinks he can get away with anything and he's living on top of the world. So I think his highs could be higher and his lows could be lower than Redford could do.
How about if we reference his role in The Fighter?
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a good one. Less Boston.
Less Boston, a little less addicted to crack.
Yes. Yep. Agreed. But that
could
same
we possibly
kind of range.
Go more addicted to crack?
Yeah. Sure. Make that happen.
Sure.
Anything for you, Mark.
I don't think it existed in 1936, but
I'm sure it did find somewhere.
A way. Sudafed or something. All right, Jer, moving on to you. Who did you pick for Johnny Hooker?
I chose an actor that I haven't seen too much of, but I have enjoyed him both as a comedic actor with a lot of good timing, but also he's just a generally a pretty good looking guy. And I think that he could pull off kind of the two different pieces of that personality where he's, like you guys have said, he's kind of coming into his own. He's growing up into this role where he's been small time cons and just getting by and having fun doing that. But now he wants to get into the serious game. And so to do that, he needs to kind of debonair up a little bit. And man, we make up a lot of terms in this thing and just, you know, become more of a gentleman, become more of somebody that people will believe has some aristocracy to them. And so I went with Justin Bartha, I believe is his how you pronounce his last name. You will probably most notably know him as the sidekick in the National Treasure movies. And also he was the, is he the groom in the Hangover movies or just the,
in the first one. Yeah.
He's got the bright blue eyes and the handsome face to be that sort of ladies man, you know, everybody likes him kind of thing. But I think he can also, do some of the action a little bit more. Cause if we do this like the original, there's a lot of running away from people. That's like all Robert Redford does for a good 2/3 of the movie is just run away.
Yeah, he's got a good run to him, that's for sure.
He runs straight.
So, but then I think he could also once they get into the con and he is playing that the role of Kelly where he's you know the right hand man of this the bookie and you know trying to play both sides and you know getting in with the Donegan Lonigan character Doyle Lonigan. And
it was a contraction.
Thank you. I think that he could do a lot of that as well and get a little bit more serious with it without betraying that this is still, you know, by and large, a fairly fun movie and not too heavy.
Yeah. I like all the reasons that you like him. I haven't seen him in much, you know, he's not done a ton of movies. Like I like him in The Hangover. Well, I liked him enough in The Hangover, but I really liked him in National Treasure.
He was adequate in The Hangover, I thought.
Yeah. He was the most throwaway character in the original Hangover, and that's not a bad thing.
Anybody could have played that role, it seemed like. He was barely there.
And he did well with it. I just, like, I haven't seen enough to show that he could fill those shoes. And admittedly, they're giant, epic shoes. But still, all the reasons that you gave for liking him, I agree with those. So, yeah.
I have umbrage in that I think he's really short. And for some reason to me, that seems like...
Now you're just trying to come up with any kind of umbrage.
He doesn't like onions.
When you're
6'4",
Andy, it's easy to pick on a short people.
He doesn't like onions, and that really bothers me.
And my mother was an onion.
My mother, bless her heart, was an onion. And that's it hits me close to the heart.
I might have been fibbing.
Might.
Was that the extent of your umbrage, Andy?
No, but the more I verbalized it, I was like, this doesn't sound worthwhile and sounds just...
You just sort of tapered off.
Just kind of hoping people just forget and move on.
The silence is deafening.
Nope. I'm Googling how tall Robert Redford is right now.
You know what? I think actually both Robert Redford and Paul Newman are pretty short, so...
As long as they're consistent.
Yeah, maybe that's the key is that you just have to make sure you get an equally heighted individual for the other role.
There you go. You heard it here.
Yeah.
He is 5'8". That is not tall.
Which one was 5'8"? Bartha or?
Bartha.
How about, do we have a Redford and Newman height yet?
5'9". Robert Redford is 5'9".
He's
jerk.
He's too short for that role.
Game, set, match, Andy wins. Wait, hold on. Sorry. Andy, the big Alabama wins.
Big Alabama.
In from New Orleans.
You know, the key for saying what I'm saying is I'm just not moving my lips. I'm just kind of letting the air just kind of flap them. Big Alabama.
Nice. Nice. Thank you, acting coach Andy.
See how I do this.
I reach down deep into my soul and I let the Big Alabama speak through my mouth. Wow, that's weird.
Hey, Big Alabama.
Perhaps we should move on.
Who did the Big Alabama pick for this role?
What just happened there?
I'm going to do that again because apparently somebody's doing some construction above me. Who did the Big Alabama pick for this role?
I went a little rogue on this pick. I wanted to do everything that everyone has already spoken in terms of this role with the age
Is
difference.
It Dikembe Mutombo?
It's Dikembe.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh, my gosh. I'm calling an audible.
Then you pictured Dikembe Mutombo in the movie.
I'm calling an audible. I'm picking Dikembe Mutombo.
Debonair, funny, tall.
Suave, funny.
You don't go to Dikembe Mutombo's house.
That's what he sounds like.
It's a lot like the Big Alabama.
Little known fact, Dikembe Mutombo is the Big Alabama. I picked Jake Johnson. Wow. You may know Jake Johnson from his role as Nick Miller on New Girl.
Oh, okay.
If you're not familiar with that show, I recommend you watch it. It's very, very funny. I picked Jake Johnson because I like the age difference with him, between him and Matthew McConaughey. And also in my mind, I see that there's even just by kind of picturing the two people in the same scene, you can clearly tell which one's got the more experience. It's been around the block a few more times. Jake Johnson definitely has a kind of, you know, aw shucks kind of fly by the seat of his pants, appearance to him. But I also think that if you cleaned him up, put him in a tux, that all of a sudden he would kind of, you know, and you kind of stand up a little bit straighter. You take a little, you know, you'd notice him a little bit more. And I also think in the scenes where Hooker is kind of playing to, Lonigan about wanting to, you know, essentially usurp Gondorf and his operation, like kind of to play that little con, I feel like he would do a good job with that. He's a little bit, he plays a little bit of a frenetic kind of, almost a little bit hyperactive kind of guy. He definitely has the humor qualities to him. So if we wanted there to be a little bit of levity in the role, I think he could do that. So it's a little bit, I think, off the beaten path, but I think he would do a good job.
I like it. I know him from nothing other than The New Girl. And I have watched several episodes of The New Girl, and he's very enjoyable. So much so that I can't see him in doing anything other than that. That's my only concern, is that it's really hard to see him.
It is very much a defining role for him. And I do agree. I feel like he needs to get more exposure in other things. Avoid being just that guy.
He was also in Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. That was great.
Yeah, yep. So I haven't seen
that movie. The other reporter, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. You should see it. It's very
good. It's on Netflix.
Yep, it's on streaming.
My biggest issue is he's too tall.
Well, see, there you go.
Yeah.
He's 5'10", so.
Oh, yeah, that's
the tower over Shorty McConaughey.
Well,
now McConaughey, I think is Redford. Actually. I'm going to look up McConaughey here. I'm going to see how tall this guy is.
We should start a new podcast where we just talk about how tall actors are.
I like it. I'd like it. Marlon Brando.
I feel like
5'11".
McConaughey is also 5'11".
Nice. All right. Well, that works.
This has been very informative.
It has, indeed. I hope our audience has not stopped listening, and if so, they've learned stuff. All right. The role of Johnny Hooker, originally played by Robert Redford. Lee went with Tom Hiddleston, and funny enough, Mark also went with Tom Hiddleston. I went with Christian Bale. Jer went with Justin Bartha, and Andy went with Jake Johnson. Now we're going to move on to the minor characters. We're going to cruise through these quickly. We've got four of those. The first is Kid Twist, originally played by Harold Gould. Kid Twist is an omnipresent behind-the-scenes setup player brought in to help put together the large crew necessary to pull off the titular sting. Sort of like the Wizard of Oz, only with a better mustache and a few less witches.
More monkeys, though.
True. Many more monkeys. I wanted somebody that that basically had that presence that you believe that he would come in. It's sort of like the equivalent in The Sting of Harvey Keitel in Pulp Fiction. This will be my second
The Wolf there you go.
In here just for fun. So it's just like they come in and it's like, all right, we're in good hands. It's like everyone is amazed that they're there. They're concerned and then immediately comforted. It's like, oh, okay. Like, he's not here to do anything to us. He's here to help us. Then we're fine. You know, like, everything's going to be okay. So I wanted somebody that had that kind of energy. It's not Harvey Keitel. That was not the reference. So I went with Donald Sutherland. I think when Donald Sutherland walks into a room, everyone's nice. Like, he's got it. Whatever it is that he needs getting, he's got it taken care of. So, yeah. Plus, he's rocking it in the Hunger Games movies.
I like that pick.
So that's who I went with for Kid Twist. Next up is Luther. Jer, tell us about Luther.
Yes. Luther is, he serves as both our hero's mentor and friend, but he also is the impetus for the story and kind of gets the plot moving. After a particular con goes poorly, Luther is whacked by Lonigan's thugs, which prompts Hooker to seek out Gondorf for some revenge grifting. And there's no grifting as sweet as revenge grifting.
Hear that.
Hear, hear.
And so for the character of Luther, I chose Craig Robinson from TV's The Office, as well as several movies, Pineapple Express. He was one of the hitmen and several other movies. He's a comedy actor. I think he could bring some lightheartedness to the beginning of the movie, but I also think that I've seen enough of him to bring some bring enough that his death wouldn't be goofy and it would do well. So that's who I went with.
I think it would be weird, but I'm totally willing to go with it.
Oh, it would be weird. Because especially because that would be all of a sudden it's like, what is Craig Robinson doing in this movie?
Yeah.
And then he'd be dead.
Yep. Boom. Just like
that.
Can
we have Umbridge on minor characters?
Sure.
Only one Umbridge.
How tall is he?
Only one Umbridge. He seems too young for the role.
There would have to be some makeup done. Yeah.
So you wanted him again to play kind of a similar age character as the original as,
yeah, I would want him as the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the movie where his main purpose is to teach, send out, and then die.
Okay. Hmm. And then one more Star Wars reference. Originally, the character was played by Robert Earl Jones, father of James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yep. And once you see it, you can't unsee it and unhear it.
Yep.
It's like closing your eyes and hearing the CNN. What's not logo? What's the
slogan?
Slogan, I guess. There we go. Thank you. Slogan.
Logo.
No more drinking for you.
All right.
All right. Mark, moving on to Billy.
Yes, we are. Originally played by Eileen Brennan, Billy, together with Henry, runs the shadiest merry-go-round in Chicago, probably the world. She is tough and clever, runs the business, serves drinks, and keeps the cops off your back. I picked Rachel Weisz for this role.
Ooh.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think she's tough enough and smooth enough. She's got the look, that sort of thing. So I picked Rachel Weisz.
I love her. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is awesome.
Yep, she's got the swagger. It's weird seeing Eileen Brennan after our Clue episode where she's just entirely different. But she's not like a beautiful woman, and I feel like a little bit of an ass of saying that, but I'm okay. It's, you know, she's not like gorgeous, but like there's that scene where she's walking down the hallway delivering beers to and from the rooms, and she's just doing like it should have the background music like bum, 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 bum. She's just doing that like wearing a 90 for the day and shaking her hips. So yeah, and I think Rachel Weisz would do that very well.
That's the sultriest walk
I've
ever seen a waitress do.
Yeah. Yep. I wrote in my little notebook when I was watching, Eileen Brennan has, in all caps, swagger.
Yeah, she does.
It's just like straight up swagger. Yeah, and totally. I think Rachel Weisz would do that very, very
well. You described
her
appropriately because totally. We were talking about this. I will shoulder some of that, that she's not pretty comment because I said that too. But I think you said it very correctly that she is striking. You know, she's not ugly. She's not conventionally pretty. But she is definitely striking and that swagger. Wow.
Yep. I buy her with Paul Newman, which is not easy. You know, like that's a big, a big partner to film.
All right, Kyle, let's go with Dirty Cop.
All right. So, this is, Lieutenant William Snyder. Lieutenant Snyder is a dirty cop who must have been so for some times. It seems like he's just able to take a few days off of PTO from his police job with no notice to try to track down Johnny Hooker, who he decides owes him money. In the original, this was played by, Charles Durning, very, very well and very, very, roly-poly. He's a big dude. He's just a big cop and he's very mean. And he's very shouty. And I wanted somebody that kind of honored that, but in that same bumbling way, but someone that still maybe was just a little bit scarier. So I went with Ray Winstone. He's probably best known as the, not the main character in Sexy Beast. That was Ben Kingsley, but the person with whom, Ben Kingsley acts, in that movie. He's been in lots of other things, but that's kind of my main point for him. He can be kind of bumbling. He was in the fourth, Indiana Jones movie as well, which we don't speak of, but just in case people haven't seen Sexy Beast, maybe you've seen that. He's in Hugo as well. So he's been in a lot of different things, but if you haven't seen Sexy Beast, do. It's very good, but he can be bumbling, but at the same time, there's just this kind of menace behind it. It's like, if he ever catches up to you, which he may not, but if he ever does, you're in trouble.
If you stop to tie your shoe for a very long time, I might catch you.
Exactly. Exactly. I wouldn't count on him catching you, but if he does, it's not going to be pretty. Exactly. All right. So that is the minor characters, and that wraps up this first part of our discussion of The Sting. So we'll be coming back to you in part two in a couple weeks. That episode will be released on January 13th, where we will be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes we would make to The Sting as well. If you'd like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net, and you can find us on Twitter and Facebook as username mathishardnet. And we put show notes up on the website as well, so if you'd like to find out more information about any of these actors, actresses, or movies that we have discussed, that is the place to go. So, gentlemen, as always, I love hanging out with you and appreciate your time. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.